my name is Rachel Lynn, and you are listening to the very first episode of Upstage Left, a podcast where I interview playwrights, directors, and actors making theater today. First of all, I just want to thank you so much for tuning in to this very first episode. I am so excited to share it with you. I just wanted to start by talking a little bit about what inspired me to make this podcast and what you might be able to expect. So I grew up in New York City, and I went to NYU for undergrad. I studied acting. And at the time, my junior and senior year, I was living in deep, deep Brooklyn off Avenue U on the F train. So my commute was about an hour each way. And during that time, I would always listen to American Theater Wing's Downstage Center podcast, which, if you're not familiar with it, it's Howard Sherman interviewing people like Bernadette Peters, Stephen Sondheim, George C. Wolfe, just like all the great American theater artists that we know and love. And so there are like 300 of these episodes, and I've listened to pretty much all of them, I want to say. And they're incredible because he interviews such a wide variety of people. He interviews lighting designers, costume designers, directors, everyone who works in the theater, basically. And I really got a lot of inspiration from those interviews as somebody who had no experience working in the theater and had no connection to it. It really provided me with hope that making a life in the theater is not an impossible task. And they stopped producing the podcast in 2013, which was really sad for me. And so recently, I've kind of been craving to hear more stories about the people who are making theater today, especially because a lot of them happen to be, you know, people I actually know, my friends who are for the first time getting their work out to wider audiences. And so I was inspired to create this podcast, which is called Upstage Left. And, you know, I have some amazing people who have agreed to come on and talk to me. People whose work hopefully that you've seen or that you're interested in. And so, yeah, without any further ado, I'm gonna start the episode. I just wanted to thank you so much for listening. And if you like it, please share, subscribe, and tune in again next time. Hey, Ming.
Hi.
So we met 10 years ago.
Is it 10?
It's been 10 years ago. We went in the fall of 2009.
Oh my God, that's right.
Interesting. I feel like it's very auspicious that it's Lunar New Year, like yesterday.
Yeah. No, well, today, isn't today the day? Oh no, no, last night. Sorry. I'm totally messed up on my days. Yes.
But you know, it's a week-long celebration. So, you know, we can say it's the week of the Lunar New Year.
Yes. Oh wow, it's 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're doing a Beijing Opera Program in Shanghai with the Shanghai Theater Academy, and you were at Coldgate.
Yeah.
In your junior or sophomore year?
It was my sophomore year.
Your sophomore year.
Sophomore year. And then I went through Tisch NYU, where Rachel went, because Coldgate had a terrible / non-existent theater program. Well, I had great professors, but in terms of the actual breadth of it, it was very small.
Yeah, and it was a crazy time.
It was such a crazy... I remember, like, we would be in our, like, picking opera class, like, talk about how low my voice is now, but I used to be able to sing those notes, actually, which I can't even come close to, but we would be in that at, like, 8 a.m. after going out till, like, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and then be... I always think about our teacher, how she would tell us that story, because we would do the cloud steps. Mm-hmm. Cloud steps are these things in picking opera where, if you've ever seen it, it's where they're walking kind of really quickly, and we would do that in a circle, and, like, these parts of your shin that you just don't even know exist just start to burn. And I remember her screaming at us, I don't know if you know, how... when she had to do it, she had to hold boiling cups of water and had sandbags tied to her legs. And so she would yell at us because we would all be like, ah. And she was like, I had sandbags tied to my legs and you're holding cups of boiling water. We're like, oh yeah, you're way more hardcore than us, like 65-year-old Chinese woman.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think about that a lot. Like whenever I'm complaining about something, I'm just like, I think about her.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's so amazing.
Yeah, so one of actually my favorite things I learned about you while we were there is that you won that Nickelodeon show, Boys versus Girls, because that wasn't that long after, right? That was like, you did that in high school.
Yeah, I guess that was pretty, recent, because that was, I guess, going to my junior year of high school. Yeah, I was 16 going on 17 when I was on Noggin.
So if you don't know Ming and you're listening to this for the first time, this is one interesting fact that you've now learned about Ming, is that she won a game show in high school.
Called Girls versus Boys. I won $10,000. Hadn't started doing drugs seriously at that time, so I actually invested it and made a lot of money, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wait, you started doing drugs seriously, so you invested it?
No. I hadn't. So instead of spending it, because I was only 16, I was like, I was smart at the time. And so I invested it and actually ended up having like money. Wow. Yeah.
You are truly a winner in every sense. 16-year-old Ming.
Yeah.
And I remember also, like, after college, you came to New York. We met up and, like, had probably drinks. We probably went out. And we were talking about, you hadn't started Spookfish yet.
Yeah.
But you were starting to write.
Yeah.
What kind of, like, prompted the move from performing and acting to writing?
So I was always interested in writing. I actually wrote poetry mostly, but I didn't, you know, I went to public school. I grew up in Ohio. And so I didn't really know that there were like new plays. And so like, I always wrote, I knew that like Shakespeare existed, but it wasn't until my freshman year in college that I read a new play, and I read a Sarah Kane play, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, yes, what is this? More of this. And so I think I started off as a performer because that's just kind of how you come to things. Cause I did, you know, I did musicals growing up in school, in elementary school, middle school. And so started off acting. And then, when I was living in New York, probably right around when we met, I'd been auditioning and just not getting roles, not getting cast, not getting called in. And moreover, the roles that I would read or go in for were so stereotypical, so racist. I think also because I'm mixed race, people really didn't know what to do with me because I wasn't white enough for white roles, wasn't Asian enough for Asian roles. And I think already Asian Americans have a weird thing because like oftentimes I find when they're asking for Asian, they actually want like from Asia Asians, like even Asian American is not a thing. So add the fact that I'm mixed race, like already Asian American. So like they hear my voice, they're like, what the hell? Like it's so low. They like I actually was in an audition once where I went in and, you know, you just go in, they see your headshot, they see you. And I, you know, said hello and they literally jumped at my voice because of how low it was. And they literally laughed and go, I didn't expect that to come out of you. And I was like, whoa, like, that's crazy. Like, what? And obviously, that's because they assumed I would have a small voice or assumed just, you know, that is my guess, is that they just didn't expect a sort of powerful, low voice to come out of me. So being mixed race, on top of the fact that people didn't really understand, I think it's gotten better now. This is, 2010. So like, it's not great, let's be honest, but it was definitely worse. And so, and then, it would be going on these auditions and you get sides. So you get to read some of the material. And I was reading some of this stuff and I was like, this isn't good. Like, I don't think this is good outside of like it being racist or misogynist or whatever. It's also just bad writing. And if this is the mecca of theater, if I'm in New York, if this is getting made, if this is getting produced, why the hell am I not trying? And so I think it just came out of frustration. And it first started just because I wanted to write myself roles. And so I acted in the first play that I wrote, Wabi Sabi. Which actually a picture just came up the other day on my Facebook from it. That was so long ago. So that I acted in, and then I acted in, I think the second two things I wrote, But then the first time I didn't, yeah. So at first just started as a way to make myself roles. And then I started to really like just the writing of it. And I had already been a writer in terms of writing poetry. And so when we had this play called The ABC's Guide to Getting Famous, which was this kind of solo show mixed with video of interviews that we did with a bunch of Asian actors that we knew. So it was sort of this satirical guide about how to get famous as an Asian person. And basically the steps were all to essentially sell your soul, you know, do an accent, make it thick, do all the things that we're asked as Asian people to do and ask to perform into a stereotype. But then this very satirical guide would then be juxtaposed with real life video footage of actors telling these horrible stories of the racism they experienced, about the marginalization they experienced, and just how they weren't seen as human. And so as the show goes on, you're sort of realize like, oh, this thing that you were laughing at before is actually not funny, because, you know, the way that it would operate is like people would be laughing at the accent. And then you hear all these Asian people being like, people ask me to do a Korean accent. I'm not Korean. Like, you know, and things like that. And so that show did really well. And that was in The Fringe. And it actually got remounted two additional times after the first time. But because that show was so about representation and sort of like opportunities and the lack of opportunities, when it came the second time to do it, I was like, why do I need to do this? First of all, I've already done it as a performer. And then like, this whole thing is about creating opportunities and lack of opportunities. Like, here's an opportunity right here. Like, why do I need to perform in it? And then I was also like, you know, and I'm kind of interested, like, what if a dude like does this? Like, because a lot of the things we're talking about, just being an Asian female, but I was like, so we actually ended up casting this awesome actor, Sai Sambun, Thai actor.
I saw it with him, actually. Yes. Yeah.
And I think it just like, it created, it opened my eyes to how much I'm not able to do, essentially. Like, when I write, I think especially because I come from an acting background, I kind of perform it as I write it. And so like, I kind of in my head have a way that I think it should sound or that it should be. And then when Sai came and did it, and he just made choices that I know I would have never made. And me just being like, oh my God, like it can be that I got addicted to. That I was like, that is incredible. Like what is that? And then, so basically, yes, since then I haven't acted in any of my things, and I act here and there when people ask me, but I don't audition anymore, because I definitely consider myself a writer. And I also just feel like the other thing outside of just being artistically fulfilled in terms of like just having my mind expanded was just like, yeah, being able to like give people opportunities. And like, if I can put myself in a position of power and I can be giving people opportunities, that makes me feel so much better than any like personal gain that like I can have. I mean, yes, that's nice too. But like at the end of the day, the things that like really make me feel good and make me feel like I've done something good is that like making it so that other people can have opportunities, making so that there can be more visibility just on a grander scale.
It's interesting that you say that, because I also remember, you know, we've talked about this when we were starting out. We talked a lot about the Asian American theater companies that have existed in the game for a while. Mayi, Natco, at the time, I think Vampire Cowboys was the company, like a lot of Asian American theater companies. And I remember us saying kind of like, I being a little unsure if there was space for us in those places. And I still feel this way, actually. I've never done a show with like any of those companies, a production. And I've been working for like 8-9 years, and that's not to say anything, but has your view on those companies changed? Because I also feel like you're in Mayi Writers Lab.
No.
Okay.
Oh, no. No, I think, so for me, I've started to be able to carve out a space for myself. And I think that part of, unfortunately, I think came out of me not associating with those companies. It's sad that you have to, I feel like, choose a route, because I would love to have an Asian community in the theater that I feel like part of. But I do think, like, unfortunately, I wish this wasn't the case, that, like, already the dominant white culture wants to put a label on you. And if you're already self-labeling, like, it just, I think, makes it easy for them to just put it in that slot, or like that they already want to do. And they still do that regardless. Like, I'm kidding myself to think they're not putting me in a slot, because they are. But, you know, I just feel like there needs to be, you know, I think the you know, Black art community is starting to get to a point, like, you know, before people, they would talk about like Tyler Perry's work, and like before they would be like, we can't say we don't like Tyler Perry's work because that's the only person who's getting work done, and we don't want jobs to get taken away from our people, right? But now they're starting to get to a place, I think, because of just like the history of the arts culture, just like, and just how on the vanguard Black culture just always has been in terms of that. Like, they're getting to a point where I think they can more openly like critique another one another's work.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're there yet, because we're still so just trying to be seen and trying to be seen as a culture. So to even like, you know, I feel like I couldn't, no one could say shit about Crazy Rich Asians. I'm not even going to say anything now, but I have thoughts, you know, but I felt like I could not say anything about that movie. And I think it's, the movie's incredible, and what it achieved is incredible. However, I still have thoughts.
Sure.
But the fact that I feel like I can, this is kind of a roundabout way to answer your question, but my thoughts of it have changed in the terms of, before I was like, why are you guys doing that, in terms of like having an Asian American theater company? And I used to be someone who was like, I don't want to write Asian roles, and like, I don't want to be seen as an Asian writer. I've definitely grown in terms of, and it was actually, speaking of Crazy Rich Asians, a Constance Wu tweet, but she tweeted this thing about how she didn't want to play Asian characters because she thought they weren't cool. And when she realized that she thought that the Asian characters weren't cool, how the fuck can she expect anyone else if she herself was judging that? So in terms of my own relationship to like, am I an Asian writer, or like, do I want to be involved with an Asian community? Like, I think I've grown into being very vocal about representing the Asian community. However, I've still kind of remained autonomous from the established theater companies, just because I just think, yeah, there's just a certain personality attached to them. And I actually think, you know, especially Monty has done such incredible things in the last year, a couple years, just in terms of what they've been putting up, the type of work that they're championing. I think they're doing like some awesome stuff. I do think there's value in me not being involved with them and kind of making my like work on my own, because like, if they're the only route to be able to be on a larger platform, like, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be multiple avenues, and like, people need to be able to like, yeah, write their thing that has nothing to do with Asians at all. It doesn't feature any Asian characters. Like, if they want, like, I've gotten to a point where I do want to always include Asian characters. Before, that wasn't true when I was starting earlier off, because I was so afraid of being seen as an Asian writer. I'm not afraid of that in that same way. And that I think was also why I was afraid to like not be involved with those companies. And on the other hand, I will also say, like, you know, I wasn't super invited into that company either. So I think that's part of it as well. Yeah. Was like, I felt I had to be a certain type of Asian. And I do think they've opened up since then, and I've had people reach out to me since then and come to my show, which was awesome and really nice, and I appreciated it so much. But it's a little sad, because I feel like when I really needed them or could have benefited from them, they weren't there for me. But I think that ultimately was good that that happened, because it made me not rely on other people. It made me rely on myself. And like, yeah, I also think, you know, it's really been interesting sort of how Usual Girls has been received, because while it, for me, I'm like, it's definitely a play about race. It's centered around an Asian character, but people don't necessarily see it as an Asian play. They see it as a play about women, which is interesting. It's an erasure on some level because I think it definitely is about race as well. But yeah. I also think it's kind of an amazing feat that people read it and they empathize with Kyung and they don't say, oh, she's Asian. Like people...
Right. They empathize with her struggle regardless of their race. Because it transcends. Because she is experiencing adolescence and a big journey in that way.
Yeah.
In addition to her racial identity.
Yeah. And like, I don't hit it. I mean, I think it's very present. And I think the people of color who see it recognize it. But it's been interesting kind of with a larger dominant white audience. Kind of the, you know, I have so many white people go, I was Kyung. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you weren't. However, that's awesome that you feel that way because that means I did a very good job. And that means Midori did a very good job and Tyne did a very good job. However, but like that's really interesting. So I've been noodling on that a lot. Sorry, I like jumped a bunch of
No, that's ways. Great. I mean, yeah. That's perfect. Yeah. And I think it says something really special. And like, I mean, it says a thing that we've always wanted to say, which is Asian American stories are human stories and vice versa, right?
That's, yes.
So in some ways, that person is Kyung, even though they're missing a small piece of...
Well, and it would be interesting, like, say, had Ma Yi done Usual Girls? I don't know. I hope that people would... come away feeling the same, but I do wonder, you know, I do the kind of mental gymnastics, like I wonder, because you're already going in to the play being like, this is an Asian theater company, like does that color your experience on some level before someone, not that that's chill, like that's fucked up, people should be able to go to an Asian theater company and be able to be open and see it, but like is there, what's the difference of someone going to Roundabout and seeing my play versus going to Ma Yi's? Like, I don't know. It's interesting. Right. Unfortunately, I can't rewind time and try it and see what would have happened. Or like, say Ma Yi had did it. Like the New York Times Review barely talked about race.
Right.
I wonder, had Ma Yi did it, would have that been a larger focus in the review even? Like, I don't know. It's really, I think about that a lot.
That's interesting. It's that, yeah, I don't often think about the frame. I mean, we're talking about like what the frame is outside and and people's expectations just going in, because even in the marketing of Usual Girls, it wasn't like, this is the story of an Asian American girl. It's just about, I mean, it's all framed in female, you know, a woman's journey is how it's described in the Times Review.
And that's, I was very purposeful about that because... I wanted people, to see this as a human journey. Now what's, I succeeded in that. However, the bigger issue and what I'm kind of asking myself with like, with future work of mine, because I do think it's great that I was able to do this. However, for people to not see it as an Asian story is also a problem.
Interesting.
Because that's an erasure. So I've literally had a dramaturg tell me it wasn't about race. And I was like, that's interesting that you feel that way. I was like, and I kind of am tickled that you feel that way, because literally the first scene she gets called a chink and the last scene a white man is masturbating to her, calling a gook. Like literally that's the first scene, then the last scene. And I was like, and a lot of things, whether as forward as that or more of microaggressions that are also throughout the play, it was interesting to have some people be like, well, but it's really about being a woman. And the thing that my response to that is always like, yeah, but my womanhood is so inextricably linked to my Asian identity, especially because of the stereotype of Asian women in this society, which is so based on sex,
mm-hmm.
and is so based on genitalia, and is so based on the sexual stereotypes which we are perceived through.
Right.
And so... yeah, it's about being a woman, but for me, at every moment in time, that had to do with my race. And like, it's interesting because some people get it, you know, even the girls breaking up scene, it's like, well, why did she like dump you? They were all doing stuff. And it's like, well, one first layer is just like, okay, she's the one that everyone's calling a slut. We're going to call her a slut so I don't get called a slut. It's just that, like, survival mechanism thing. But on the second hand, it's also, like, she's the one other person. Like, not only did she give the blowjob, but she's also other. And all the women of color that I knew who saw that got that immediately. They got that immediately.
Yeah.
But then a lot of white people came out being like, why did they do that? I'm like,
that's so
I don't know. Why did they do that? Why don't you think about that?
Just while we're speaking about Usual Girls, I think this is a perfect moment to say it's, if you know, you're listening and you don't know this, it is the first show in the Underground series that has sold out its extension prior to opening night. And I think also we're talking about a scene in the show where the main character gets broken up with by her best friend from childhood, and they're in junior high school. And one thing Ming has said is that when she was writing this play, she was thinking about, you know, can you write a female story where there's no love interest? And I think that's really powerful and interesting. But even though the whole play is about sex and sexuality in a lot of ways too, in our journey through that. And I also wanted to say, you also said something that really stood out to me, which is about rape, it being such a common experience among women. And it's not because of, you know, one night going out and having too much to drink. It's because of a lifetime of being told that you need to act a certain way, that things that happen to you aren't a big deal. I think I've been thinking about that a lot, actually, generationally. I feel like our generation of women, and maybe only because I'm of this generation and I don't know how women of like an earlier generation feel, but I've been thinking a lot about how this is, for some reason, like growing up in the 90s and early aughts, there was some kind of like subliminal messaging in all programs where like it was cool to not really like make sex a big deal and like not really honoring our body's worth. And I don't know. It's
Totally. I was actually talking to someone the other day because we were talking about why growing up in the 90s was so fucking weird. And like, we were actually talking about like Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and like just having this vague sense, like not even like really knowing what was going on, but like just having this vague sense that like Bill Clinton was like great and that like Monica Lewinsky was a slut. And that was just like sort of the narrative that was present, like whether or not you were actually watching it or not. And like all these, you know, the like Lorena Bobbitt thing is coming on. Like I remember that being a thing where everyone would just talk about, oh my God, this crazy woman who just like cut off this dude's dick. Like only, you know, there's this new documentary coming out that's basically like she was horribly abused in a super abusive relationship and was afraid for her life. But like the narratives, like it's so interesting. I do think, yeah, what you're saying about, like, I don't know, there was this like thing about like being a cool girl, which I guess like did exist before, but there was something so just, I don't know. Yeah. And I think maybe it also has to do with like the internet, like starting to be so present for us and just like, and just like, I don't know, just like cybering and shit like that. Like, I don't know. I don't know how much that plays into it, but
there was definitely a feeling of dehumanization, I think. And the advent of like free porn.
Yeah.
And the images that were like just pumping through all media at that time.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, I guess like, you know, I guess there were always like teen stars and like things like that, but I don't know, just even thinking about like I watched the Genie in a Bottle video like again recently, and she's like 16 in that, and she's like singing Rub Me the Right Way, and like it's just like, wait, what? And like you go and look back at Baby One More Time, and Britney Spears is 16, and they're like, I don't know, some of these, well, yeah, what we were being encouraged to do just from the media, and like, yeah, the media is a big thing in Usual Girls too, like how, you know, her seeing certain movies, her seeing porn at a young age started to affect how she viewed her own body, you know. And maybe it was just like all of a sudden there was just an increase in images just for the first time in a way that there wasn't, because I'm thinking now, you know, fast forward to now, these kids were on social media all the time. Like, oh, I couldn't imagine having Instagram, you know, growing up then. Like, and already we were pretty exposed. We could go online and download shit. Like, you know, I downloaded porn and stuff like that. Like, and you couldn't really do that, I guess, before. Like, you could go, like, find the Playboy and stuff. But, like, I don't know. I feel like maybe it was just because also just, like, putting kids in front of a TV or putting them in front of video games or, like, putting them in front of the computer, like, maybe wasn't such a thing anymore. So we just, like, were more free in that way to, like, find things and be influenced by things. I don't know. But what you're saying is, like, really interesting. Yeah, how... Yeah, it was, like, cool to be, like, slutty and, like... It was, like, cool to be, but, like, not too slutty. And, like, that line, like, was never clear.
Right. And you said that unusual rules.
Yeah.
It's like, and certain rules for certain people.
Yes. Yes.
And you never, and it felt like, yeah, moving target. Like, you never knew when you did something that was, like you know, crossed the line. Yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah. It was, like, offsides, but, like, the half court was, like, always moving. And so you never knew, yeah, what was right, what was wrong. Yeah, it was fucking weird.
So Usual Girls is, like, super personal play. I mean, you've spoken about that, and I don't know. I mean, what do you usually say when people ask you about that? Like, how personal is it? Or, you know, what do you usually say?
It's very personal. There's obviously, I take liberties, you know, some characters are, like, condensed. I'm not Korean, I'm Chinese. But, like, for me, I needed to create some sort of distance between me and my character. And for me, I was like, well, she's Asian American. Like, I feel like this, I think any Asian American woman has probably gone through these things. And, like, you know, I think it was, like, interesting because Midori's then Japanese, I'm Chinese. So I was like, should I change it to Chinese? I don't know. I thought about that. Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, yeah, my dad's a character, you know, my high school friends, like, a lot of them are condensed into different people. Like, a lot of characters are, like, three people in one.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yeah, like, all those events are real or very drawn from real events. Like, you know, timeline might change, location might change. But for the most part, every single thing in that is real, or it's something I heard from a friend that they claimed was real. That was really important to me for writing it, because some of the things that are outlined, like, are not things that are talked about very often. The one thing that I could always go back to in this play was, like, but this happened. So even if this might seem weird or seem intense or whatever, like, this happened in my life. So if you want to say that's, like, not real, I'm just like, okay, you're super gaslighting me right now. But yeah, like, so even, you know, it ends in this very intense scene where this dude's masturbating on a subway and everyone was like, that's so intense. And I was like, have you not been on a subway and female in New York? Like,
yeah. I have to tell you, that actually happened to me. It's only happened to me one time, but I was 9 years old.
Oh my God. That's horrible.
I was, like, on the way home from the library and I was with a friend. That's the good news. But we look over and some guy's masturbating, like, right across. And that was the first time I saw a penis in real life. Yeah.
Wow. That is so fucked up.
Yeah, I didn't expect to share that today on the interview, but you know, it comes up. Would you say that in terms of your process, your stuff is always pretty personal? I mean, just knowing your work, I would say yes. But
yeah, you know, so I think before I used to, like, couch it in characters more, like, Usual Girls was definitely, like, just very, very just, like, I didn't, other than changing my name, like, in the play to Kyung, like, essentially, like, it's pretty much the same. Whereas, you know, some plays are just really couch, but yeah, for the most part, it's pretty personal. And that's, like, something I'm just, like, excited to continue doing, because I've had, like, a very weird life. And, like, I just feel it was really awesome to see, like, I was really scared kind of putting this out there because it is so personal and it deals with, like, a lot of very intense shit. But, like, the overwhelming response to it has been so positive. And I've just had so many people, like, just now, like, what people do is, like, I share stuff and then they share stuff. And it's just, like, become this, like, awesome thing where we're just, like, all being like, yeah, this fucking weird thing happened. This fucking weird thing happened. Why is this still a thing? Like, and so that just makes me more excited to just, like, yeah, continue to go to this vulnerable place, because clearly, you know, not only on an artistic level, I think I was able to hone it in a satisfying way. So if I can continue to structurally do that and not just, like, turn my work into my diary, like, as long as I can do that, like, I don't know, there was something really special and I feel like important in doing that. Cause I just had so many people just be like, wow, I've never seen this thing that happened to me expressed on stage, or have people say, I didn't even know that could be a scene. And, like, that was part of what I wanted to undo with this play, because the history of this play, just to back up a hot sec, was, like, I originally was writing a play about Dove Charney, who was the disgraced CEO of American Apparel.
Right.
I knew I wanted to write something that was about the female experience, about misogyny. And so I started writing this play about this dude because of, like, if you don't know, he ran American Apparel. He basically slept with all the women who worked for them. Most of the pictures of the models were women from the store that he just had sex with and had them wear the stuff and didn't pay them, and just, like, basically said, you know, you'll be a model, and just used his position of power to exploit women. And so for some reason, I wanted to write a play about this dude. I know why, because I was going to make him out to be the piece of shit that he clearly is. But then at some point writing it, I was like, why am I centering this narrative that I knew I wanted to be about the female experience? Why am I centering it around this dude? And it's, like, shitty dude. And, like, why am I doing that? And then I started to be like, I was really disturbed by that, disturbed by my impulse to center this narrative around this man. And then I started to be like, what are all the things that I've been told in my life? Go back to this thing about rape, you know, what are all the microaggressions? But even on, like, a, like, taking the sexual abuse up, but, like, what are just the things as a woman that I've been, like, told in my life are just, like, not worthy? Like, my body, like, my literal experiences, like, yeah, why? Like, I was like, I know so many, like, girls, like, we humped each other, like, we showed each other our vaginas. Like, why haven't I seen that on stage? If this is just a thing that, like, we've all done and, like, know it happens, like, and I started to be like, wait, but I knew about boners. I knew about wet dreams. I knew so much about males' anatomy and male coming of age because there was media that depicted it. Like, I watched Stand By Me, like, growing up. That was one of my favorite movies. It's like watching these boys have, like, leeches suck on their penises. Like, I'm just like, wait, so I can, like, I've seen that. I've seen a male bleed from his genitalia, but I haven't seen a female bleed from her genitalia. I feel like the first time I even saw that was, like, on I Love Dick, like, 2 seasons ago. But do you know what I mean? I was like, I've, like, stand by, you know, I grew up, like, knowing about male anatomy, like, knowing boys get boners, but, like, I didn't know what discharge was. Like, I, like, didn't know, or I was talking to someone the other day, like, Ali Wong has this amazing stand-up, Baby Cobra, that she does while she's 6 months pregnant. Dude, I'm 30, or no, I just fucking turned 31. I'm 31 years old. I didn't know that shit about getting pregnant. Like, I've been a woman of childbearing age since I was, what, like, 14? Like, I'm like, I don't know shit about childbirth. Like, I'm learning at age 31, like, shit about childbirth, that, like, your nipples get dark. Like, there's all this stuff about female anatomy and what the female body goes through, literally, to continue our species going, that I have no... The only way I even knew that was because an amazing woman had the quote unquote audacity to essentially do a stand-up 7 months pregnant and talk about it in a real way. But it's like, I didn't learn that in sex ed.
Right.
What textbook is that in, that your nipples get darker? I didn't read it. I was not assigned that. Like, and it's kind of crazy how much just even our literal bodies are just not even explored, or if they are explored, it's because they're being having sex with someone's having sex with it.
Right.
Or someone's undressing it.
Right.
I mean, and that's not even our literal body. That's not our actual bodies. Yeah. That's a fantasy body. Exactly. It's not real. Exactly. Yeah, that's
exactly.
And so we all, and I mean, you talk about that in the play, how we all grew up with these unrealistic expectations of our bodies, and we try to erase like hair and anything that is natural.
Exactly.
And it's gross, you know, and yeah.
Yeah, like there was just the first Gillette commercial ever for women that actually featured pubic hair or actually featured body hair, or maybe it hasn't come out, or there, I just read an article. It's like the first one that's coming out, but it's already like creating waves, because if you actually think about it, all like the Nair and like Gillette commercials are all already smooth armpits, already smooth legs being shaved, which one is very redundant. And like, and two, it's just like, what? And so people are talking about like for the first time ever in 2019, you're going to have actual women's hair featured in a hair removal product commercial, which is groundbreaking. Wow. Actually groundbreaking, which is so terrifying that that's true.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the I mean, that's like, you only got one take. What happens after you shave it? Yeah, I guess you get a bunch of hairy legs. I don't know.
I mean, you can CGI some like somewhere on it.
That's true.
I mean, they can erase stretch marks. They can add hair.
Right. Yeah. Let's see that hair. So do you feel like, I mean, you've always been very vocal about representation on stage. I mean, you came out with an article in 2015 about, you know, Say No to Mikado, about the yellow face at the opera. And now we're 4 years later and we're in 2019 and, you know, Usual Girls has been a hit. Are you feeling and seeing the change? Like,
yes, in terms of, I mean, there was, you know, when my play was going on, like Lawrence Yee's play was up. Mike Liu just had Teenage Dick up. You know, Leonika Winkler's God Said This is up right now. So just in terms of like, there's definitely more Asian work that I think has been up. And I've started to just see like, you know, in these fellowships and things like that, I've started to see like more Asian names. But I still think it does still seem to be in a tokenized way, I do think. And I'm still not seeing, like, it still feels like we're being put in a slot. Like, maybe there are more slots, or now there's a guaranteed slot every season instead, because no one's going to do an all-white season anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was MTC? Was that 2 years ago or something?
It was like last year. I think
it was not that recent.
And they had to change their season. Or they had like one person of color.
Exactly. So like, or even just seeing like the signature thing. It was like all white dudes and then Lenotage. You know what I mean? And it's like, so I guess it's good that they feel like they can't just do an all white seasons. But like, it still feels tokenized to me.
You think so? What about with like female stories and like African-American stories, you know, Black stories? Do you feel like across the board we're seeing a change?
I think there's some. I mean, yes, you know, I think Black Panther, I think Get Out, on the New York stages, I think Black artists have been able to definitely, or are starting to be given opportunities to have platforms and stuff. But also that feels so related to like the police violence that's happening. And like, it's like all, you know, earlier I was talking about how Me Too kind of changed how people responded to Usual Girls. And so like, it feels like, it's like, is that what it takes for like these stories to like be important to you? Is people being brutalized in the streets?
It does feel like the only upside to the Trump election of 2016 is like the wave of art that's being created out of the need to humanize people who are different.
Yeah. And I definitely, if not the actual desire, definitely people are afraid of getting in trouble. People are afraid of being racist or like being deemed racist. So they at least feel like on some level that they can't do that. What I'm hoping to see is the actual want to do diverse stories, and not because it'll make it easier for you to sell your pilot as a white person or because you don't want to get in trouble for having all white whatever. Like, for people to actually want to like learn about other people and write different stories from a genuine place of curiosity and like wanting to learn versus how they can benefit off of it. Because what I've seen, because now it's become lucrative or it's starting to become sexy or sellable or whatever to have diversity, is now people are just putting themselves in positions that they can now be profiting off that, those things. So is that a real change in terms of like morals? I don't think so. I think it's people seeing an opportunity that benefits them and maintains the status quo. So that's a lot of what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot, you know, I've worked on some television shows that it was very clear that the only reason the POC were hired were to legitimize the white creators' appropriation and use of the N-word.
Wow.
Yeah. Like on a Netflix show. Like this was that I believe is getting made. We all three POC quit off of it. But like this, and this person is like, is the, you know, quote unquote, wokest white liberal person that you would ever meet. And that's why I was tricked into working on this show, because at face value, what the person said was all the right things. But when it actually came down to, because the thing that I'm starting to run up against as someone who is getting jobs and starting to be in these rooms, what I'm now running up against is people don't actually want to give up their power. Sure. They want to benefit off of you. They want to make money off of what's special or interesting or different about you or sellable about you. But do they actually want to step back and allow you to actually tell the story from a real place? Or do they still want to maintain control over it in some way? And so what I'm seeing is a lot of very smart white people training themselves in the language of allyship and then using that to continue to make more money than me off of my work, that the reason people want it is because it's different.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I'm seeing. So what I hope, and that's not everyone, but it's been, I've had a very eye-opening last year, to be totally frank. You know, it's like, it was really fucking Wizard of Oz moment. Like, it was just very like, oh shit. Like, it might seem, because the other thing is like, you know, what we're seeing is the thing that actually makes it on screen. And we're seeing the thing that actually makes it on stage, you know? So not necessarily seeing the behind the scenes of how that even got that way, or whether or not there actually are even people of color writing those characters. And yeah, it's just, I want to be optimistic and hope that there's been change. And I do think there's been a change in terms of people feeling like they can't get away with just not interrogating that at all. But what I haven't truly felt or seen was a true, honest desire. And that's not everyone. There are some people who genuinely want to learn. But sometimes I feel like it's just a way to like stay relevant, get your work programmed, not because you actually care about these things or have an investment in that, which sucks.
Well, to end on a positive note, just thinking about coming back full circle,
yeah.
If you think about, you know, where you and I were 10 years ago, having that conversation about how we're going to fucking make it in this industry, what piece of advice would you have given would you give yourself if you could?
Oh, that I would have like actually listened to. Oh my God. I mean, this is still advice that I'm like need to give myself like every day, is that like you are not a fake. You got here because you worked hard and you like deserve it. I feel like it's really, I'm even saying that now and I don't fucking believe it at all. I'm like about to cry. But I think it's really hard, especially as a person of color, especially as a woman, especially just like never growing up, ever seeing yourself, it's like really hard to feel like I'm always like, this is a fluke. They're going to find me out. I suck at writing, like all the time. And like, I don't know how much of that is like my programming or like, you know, and I hope I get to a point where, God, we're trying to get on a light note here and I'm just making it depressing. I really hope I can like start to get to a point where I start to feel like good and like feel like, no, I deserve that. Or like, yeah, that was fucking awesome. Like that's very hard for me to do. Yeah. And I think part of it is also like, yeah, I'm just so scared. I think also that the opportunity is going to get taken away from me. So I think part of it is also like shielding my own self from heartbreak. It's like, I almost don't want to like put that much into it because then I'm afraid if it doesn't work out or it's taken away from me that, you know, I'll fucked up or whatever. And so, yeah, I guess like to my past self slash also moving forward self is just like, you're here for a reason. Like you are talented, like stop wasting so much mental energy on asking whether or not that's true. And like, just do the work, do the things that you're interested in, do the things that you wish you could have seen growing up that would have healed you when you were younger. And if you just work from that place and create from that place of nurturing that younger self and being like, yo, here's like this dope Asian girl, like you, that you can like look at and love, that is what's important. And so like, if I can like actually believe that and like continue to believe that and keep seeing worth in myself, like, and like, yeah, back to Constance Wu tweet, like see myself as cool, see that young girl who didn't feel cool at all as cool and continue to like create those characters that I think are cool. Like that is what I want to do and continue to do and tell my younger self.
Amazing. I believe in you. You're worthy. Thank you so much.